Hi, this is Sian,
and welcome to Radio Northleach Book Club Bookworms. Earlier on this week, I had a chat with Martha and Tim Hamilton about Tintin, or Tintin, and why they enjoy reading those books together. First of all, let's hand over to Tim and Martha to hear an excerpt from The Black Island. Be warned, there are some spoilers.
Right. We are in Scotland.
No, no.
For the Black Island. And Tintin is on the hunt of mysterious money forgers. Fake money, Martha. His plane has crashed. But the mysterious pilots he's chasing have crashed as well. Tintin is taken in by a kindly old Scots guy who dresses Tintin up in a very fetching kilt and tam o' shanter. And off Tintin walks to Kiltok. Good, Martha.
Kiltok.
Yes.
Kiltok.
Good evening, he says. Is there a way I can hire a room for the evening, for the night? Certainly, says the innkeeper. Good. I also would like to eat something, but before I'd like to know, have they found the body of the men whose plane was discovered this morning? No, they haven't found him yet.
And they will never find him.
Who's that, Martha?
Him.
Crazy old man.
Never!
And why is that?
Why? Ha ha ha, you see very well that you're not from around here, young man. You haven't perhaps heard speak of the beast.
Dun, 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 dun.
I have.
You have, haven't you, Mops?
Because I can hear you saying it.
What beast are you speaking of, says Tintin? The monster of Loch Ness?
Don't make me laugh, young man. I'm speaking of the beast which lives on the Black Island in the ruins of the chateau. Sorry, the castle, Benmore. It's the beast that devours everyone who has the temerity to adventure there. Wait. 3 months ago, despite all our advice, two young men decided to make an excursion. They left in a canoe. The sea was calm, not a breath of wind. And well, we never heard of them again. And last year, there was a fisherman from Kiltok who disappeared.
Ah, that's a
terrible beast.
What's that, Martha?
Boom.
Boom. What's the boom, do you think?
Him.
Him? Him who, him?
The gorilla.
Ah, well.
He's not a beast, he's a gorilla.
We know that, but he probably has been eating people who've gone there.
Thanks for that, Tim. So let's start the interview.
Hey.
Hi, no, Martha. What have you got there?
Noise, Marks.
No, it doesn't make any noise.
Mm-hmm.
I'll show.
What do they say about children and animals, Sean?
Absolutely. Hey, Martha.
Didn't make a noise.
Come and say hello.
Martha, do you remember talking to me on Saturday?
I remember.
Do you remember we said we'd talk about a book? Do you remember which book we said
Black
we'd talk
Island.
About? Yes. Is that your favourite book?
I don't know which one is my favourite book. There's too many. I just love all of them. Shine ones.
Okay, we love The Secret of the Unicorn, don't we?
Yeah.
And Red Rackham's treasure.
Not Red Rackham's. It's Captain Haddock's ancestors.
It's Captain Haddock's ancestors' treasure, technically. Oh. But the book is called Red Rackham's treasure because he's the pirate that stole it.
Can I show you Red Rackham?
Yes, you can show me
it. I open the book, there's another one on the other side. Other way, Daddy.
Oh, I see. So inside the cover of the book, there are lots of pictures of the other books.
There's a gallery of all of the figures and at the beginning of each book.
A book in it. Story in it.
Yeah, there's two stories in this one. But we love to go through and try and remember who they were, Martha, don't we?
Money counterfeiters.
Money counterfeiters. Yeah, we read about those, didn't
They're
we?
They're baddies.
They're baddies.
I'm just trying to show you them.
I can see.
It's falling out.
Well, page falling out. Another page fell out.
Oops, you'll have to take those back in.
It's so old that the pages fall out. And you've been so uncareful with them.
So, Tim, why are they so old?
Well, we buy them secondhand in French secondhand sales when we're on holiday. It's a bit of a ritual, and we've now managed to buy every single book.
Another one on the other side.
Yeah.
On the other side.
It's a holiday ritual, really, when we go to France every year, where we would have been this week had it not been for lockdown.
So why did you suddenly start it? What started it? Was it with Martha?
Well, I used to buy Tintin books when I was young on holiday, and I tried reading one to Martha one morning and she absolutely loved it. Do you remember?
So we read more and 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 more until we read all of them.
Several times.
Did you have to start again then?
Some of them got lost. We have two small ones and loads of big ones. There's a China small one, and Red Rackham's treasure is smaller, Alan, and another Red Rackham's treasure is a small one. It's a big one.
There were two that we couldn't find in French kind of jumble sales, you know, like just wherever we'd go, there'd be these
Moulin Golf Rack.
Ah, now, one of the things I can't translate is Captain Haddock swearing. So
Moulin Gouffre.
And our favourite is where he goes, Moulin Gouffre, Moulin Gouffre.
Moulin Gouffre.
Which means?
Waffle pan.
It's one of his greatest insults. When he's shouting at people, he goes, filibusters, freshwater sailors.
Coracle.
Iconoclasts.
Moulin Gouffre.
And Moulin Gouffre. Which he has to say in a Scottish accent because Captain Haddock.
Moulin Gouffre.
Has a Scottish accent.
So we're subjected to your Scottish accent for that one as well.
Yeah, so we had to look up Moulin Gouffre, found out it was a waffle pan, and then had to look up what a waffle pan is because I couldn't explain it.
You could probably pick up one of those at a jumble sale as well.
Probably could, yeah.
So when you were a child, were you reading them in French?
Nearly pee.
Do you need to take a break, Martha? Say that again, Sean, I'm sorry.
I said, why don't you let Martha take a break and you and I can carry on?
Go on,
I don't want to take a break.
Ow. Sorry, Sean, what was your question?
Did you read them in French as a child?
I think I did, yeah. I tried to, and I would read them very, very slowly with a dictionary, yeah. Just, you know, when I was studying French at school, and I love French, such a beautiful language. Still try and keep it up as a reading. I can speak French absolutely fluently when I've had several beers, or so I think in my mind, but normally I can't speak it, but I can still read it.
I'm delighted, by the way, that you have, you know, been expanding your vocabulary with such excellent words.
Yeah, important words.
I'm sure that's going to come in handy on holiday.
Definitely, yeah. Moulin Gouffre.
I've got all the covers up, and I was just sort of reminding myself of the ones that I'd read as a child. But then I was really struck with some of the images of Tintin in them. And it's just that fabulous one. I loved it when you were reading The Black Island. And he's got his kilt and his tam o' shanter on.
I found a whole article about Tintin's dress and the way he dresses, because you think he always wear these plus fours and a blue jumper and a little white T-shirt and his little quiff. But actually, he does get changed quite a lot during the... He wears all sorts of costumes and disguises, and but nothing like the Thompsons, who just dress in outrageous. They're always trying to dress in local costumes, and they're always trying to blend in, but they look ridiculous. It's like they've dressed in a Beefeater's outfit to blend in England, or a Greek skirt, you know, like one of those white skirts.
Well, I was reading that the British publishers of Tintin actually had them change some of the things in it because they weren't British enough when he was visiting the UK. So he had them change some of the architecture.
Tintin The reporter.
Yes, that's I've not ever read the English ones, so I don't know.
Yeah, so things like their chateaus were a bit chateau-y.
Yeah, very good. Yeah.
And the police were armed.
No, I'm gonna read when I reread it, because the Black Island being the one that's set in England and Scotland.
Yeah.
They fly in the fog to Scotland halfway through and crash, which is why he ends up in a tam o' shanter and a kilt.
Because he needs a new outfit. I was loving the Red Sea sharks. I've realised if you look at the front of it, poor old Captain Haddock's taken his shirt off and he's waving it like a flag. Tintin, middle of the Red Sea, still in his pullover.
And through going through the desert as well. So he walks through the desert and nearly dies, but he's still got his pullover on and his little handkerchief on his head.
He reminds me of you in so many ways, Tim. So Martha's already said she hasn't got a favourite. She likes them all. Do you secretly have a favourite?
I love Tintin. I'm in love with him.
Yeah, Martha actually wants to marry Tintin. Yeah, my favourite is The Secret of the Unicorn. I can remember this from when I was a child, and I love the little clues that they find in each of the three masts. And I absolutely love the description where Captain Haddock tells the story from the diary of his ancestor.
I love that bit.
Yeah, the ancestor Chevalier de Haddock, or whatever that would be in English.
And I love the fight.
Yeah, there's this huge fight between him and Red Rackham, and he blows up the ship and it sinks, and what's happened to all the jewels?
Fell into the water.
Or did they?
Spoilers.
Spoil the ending, Mark.
Oh. Yeah, I enjoyed our gorilla spoilers early on. It's not a monster, it's a gorilla.
Not a beast. He's a gorilla.
To be fair, a gorilla is a beast, Martha, and I'm sure he would.
Daddy, he's so cute, though.
Well, that's because he's scared of Snowy.
So I was looking up a bit of the history. Have you read Tintin in the Land of the Soviets?
Well, we did start to try to read it, and it's just weird. And the earlier books are really both quite crude and also quite racist, and over time it gets better, and actually Tintin defends people of different races in some of the books, but the early ones I've actually stopped reading them to Martha. The one that we've never read is the Tintin in the Soviets, because it's very strange, crude black and white drawings.
Well, yeah, and it was sent, I think he was basically sent there for political reasons to write this book, because he was working for quite a right-wing, very Catholic publication in Brussels in the 20s and 30s.
Very interesting.
So it was quite political, and he wouldn't let it be re-released for many years.
What was it? Is that because he had doubts about the extreme right wing? Did he have some sort of conversion?
I've skimmed some of the history, but he left Belgium when the Nazis invaded, but then came back a few weeks later when the king kind of asked people to come back. And he ended up working under the Germans at a newspaper through that era, so was accused after the war of collaboration, although he wasn't convicted of anything.
Black Markers, many people came out of that time, didn't they?
Yeah.
There's quite a bad impression of police generally in foreign countries that pretty normally are corrupt, and it's quite a dark view of foreign cultures.
But it might be reflecting his own police force as well, I suppose.
Well, that's possibly true.
So do you want a few bits more trivia that I found out?
I'd love. Would you like some trivia from Tintin, Marbs?
Which was the first one, do you think, that came out in colour?
Ooh. I wonder if that was the Congo, or was it in America?
Book 10, The Shooting Star, which is your one with your massive mushroom on the front.
Yeah, I didn't realise they were released without being in colour.
Yeah, so they were retrospectively, obviously, coloured in. So, but that was in 1942.
He does also seem to update some of the technology in it, because like there's a train that looks like kind of a modern diesel train rather than an old steam train. And yet, when you look at when it was written, I think it was written before that era, but maybe not.
They did. So in terms of how they were published as serials originally. Mm-hmm. Originally in other publications. So, you know, the really early ones were this sort of Catholic publication, the 20e siècle. And then after the war, they originally set up a sort of dedicated magazine. And then after that, he set up his own Studio Hergé, which was entirely dedicated to sort of publishing Tintin.
Wow.
And they were all published as serials first. And so they're known as albums rather than books.
They have that sense because actually they end on a little cliffhanger almost at every other page. And
yeah.
We always like to go, dun, dun, dun. What happens next?
Yeah, I'm guessing that's exactly that point is where it would have been. A bit like Dickens. Anyway, the last one is Tintin and Alf art, which links, the cover goes back to the original style of the black and white style. It was left unfinished and it was, wasn't published till after Hergé's death. So that came out in 1986 and he died in 1983. So you probably haven't got that one either.
I don't think I have. Is it an actual Tintin book or is it a book about Tintin?
No, I think it is an actual Tintin book.
I didn't realize that. I might have I'll have to look it out. We haven't just consumed the books. There are a series of amazing cartoons that are actually incredibly faithful to the books. They tinker a bit with the story. And then there's an incredible Steven Spielberg film, which has really blended a couple of the books, but is absolutely amazing. It's captivating kind of 3D type animation, really interesting approach. We love watching all of it, actually. I think my favourite bit of all of it was me at the beginning going, we're in Scotland. No, we're not.
No, that was the bit that had me.
Sort of literal brain.
I know.
We are actually in North Leech. But Tintin's in Scotland.
Anyway. If you go to en.tintin.com, that's the Tintin sort of foundation that was set up with his legacy.
Yes.
Moulin Sarr. Is that what Captain Haddock's chateau is called?
Moulin Sarr, yeah.
Yeah.
What's it called in English? Marlin Spike.
So that's now the sort of foundation that looks after the legacy of Tintin. All right, thank you very much, Martha. Do you want to come and say goodbye?
Mooly Della.
Bye.
Bye, Martha.
Mala Della. Mala Della.
Thank you so much to Tim and Martha for talking to me this week. I hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as I enjoyed chatting with them. Our next recommendation comes from the person who was the inspiration for Radio North Leech Book Club. I haven't told her this, but it was Daisy Kelsall's wonderful Mr. Men stories back at the beginning of Radio North Leech all those weeks ago that inspired me to start recording and set up Radio North Leech Book Club. So here's Daisy.
Hi, I'm Daisy. I'm 10 years old and I'm going to tell you about the book I'm currently reading called The Saga of Eric the Viking. This is the tale of a Viking warrior. His name was Eric. Eric is no ordinary Viking. With his trusty band of men, he sets sail in search of the land where the sun goes at night. In fact, he finds much more. The sea dragon, dog fighters, and giants combine to make his voyage a great saga of thrilling adventures. This is the first chapter. I hope it makes you eager to read on. Eric and the Storm. This is the tale of a Viking warrior who lived hundreds and hundreds of years ago. His name was Eric. His ship was called Golden Dragon, and its figurehead was a fierce monster carved out of wood and covered with gold leaf. One day Eric said to his wife, "I must find the land where the sun goes at night." But his wife replied, "No one has ever been to that far country, and those of who have tried, few have ever returned." "You are right," Eric said, "but until I have sought that distant land, I shall never sleep in my bed again." So he called his son, who was 15 years old, and told him he must guard their home by day and night. Then he took his sword, which was called Blue Blade, and stepped on board Golden Dragon and sailed off towards the setting sun. That night they sailed on far from land, and Eric stood at the helm of Golden Dragon gazing into the darkness. Eric's men whispered to each other that they were seeking the land where the sun goes at night, and that no one had ever found it and lived to tell the tale. Just then a bright green light appeared above them, and a star shaped like a dragon leapt across the sky. Eric turned to his men and said, "We shall find what we seek," and no one dared say a word after that. The next morning they found themselves alone on the ocean, where great waves heaving the ship up and down. Eric looked up into the sky and smelt the wind. "We shan't make it," whispered Eric's men one to the other as the storm clouds blotted out the sun. "We'll be wrecked to sea," they murmured as the first drops of rain fell on the deck. "There's land," called out Eric. "Take down the sails. We'll have to row for it." They leant on their oars as the rain began to pour down on them, and the speck of land on the horizon got bigger as the skies got darker and the sea grew rougher. But they rowed with all their might and all their main, as the lightning forked across the heavens and the thunder rolled all around them, they got closer and closer to land. "Rocks to port!" cried the lookout, and the helmsman steered Golden Dragon round to starboard. "Rocks to starboard!" cried the lookout, and Golden Dragon swung back to port again. "Look out ahead!" cried Eric, and the golden monster on the helm scraped against the rocks as the sea dragged them down and threw them up again. "We've had it now," cried Eric's men to one to another, and they shut their eyes. "Keep rowing," cried out Eric, and he steered the ship between the rocks and the boiling sea until all at once they found themselves in a deep forge. One by one, Eric's men opened their eyes. The rain still poured down on them and the lightning lit up the wild rocks around them, but the water was calm and they were safe. "Now we must sleep," said Eric, "but tomorrow we shall repair Golden Dragon before we dare to go back on the high seas." His men laid the mast down and threw the sails across it like a tent, and there they slept for the rest of that stormy night. I think this book might appeal to both children and adults. It is full of dramatic adventures, fierce characters, and plenty of tension. Enjoy!
Thanks so much to Daisy for that fantastic review of The Saga of Eric the Viking, which was written by Terry Jones, who adult listeners might remember more as a member of Monty Python or a talented screenwriter and director. So the other book that we read today was The Black Island by Hergé. Thanks to my two wonderful interviewees, Tim and Martha Hamilton, and our very own Radio Northleach DJ, Daisy Kelsall. That's it for today. Listen in soon for more Radio Northleach Bookworms.